You are listening to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM in the Brighton area and RadioReverb.com online. Welcome to the UK's only radio show about HIV and living a healthy life. It's the HIV Hour. On today's show, we feature a rundown of the latest news and talking points about living with HIV from the Brighton area and the world at large. Also, information on Brighton's HIV organisations and some other events. Do email us at hivhour@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter at @HIV_hour and Instagram at @HIVhour. If you miss the show on a Thursday at 7 p.m, then you can listen again at 4 p.m. on Monday and at noon on Tuesday, or indeed catch up with an older show by going to the Listen Again page on RadioReverb.com.
Good evening, one and all.
Yes.
Good evening, everybody. Hello.
Good evening. Yes, very nice evening. It has been a while, Josh.
It's been a while, hasn't it? So we've all been quite busy, haven't we? So it's been difficult, but we're back on track.
Back on track and raring to go.
Yes. Shall we do a round robin? How are you, Steve?
Yes.
I'm good, thank you, Josh. I hit the big 5-0 last week. So,
oh, amazing! Great.
So yeah, I'm in the 5-0 club now. So we had a really good night. So that was nice. So good to see friends, and yeah, just kind of feel a bit more normal again after the last 2 years of COVID. So yes, it was nice, very nice.
Brilliant.
Good. What about you, Sue?
Yeah, I've been. God, I'm sounding really boring, just working. But I sound really boring. But no, it's lots of stuff happening, exciting things, keeping busy, and just being really busy. That sounds really boring. Sorry about that. Not as exciting as your 50th. But I was 50 many years ago, so. But I'm not telling you which one I'm looking forward to now, because it's a few years to go. And what about Tanya?
Yeah, I was just busy. You know, this month it looks like I'm always concentrating on other people's birthdays. Though mine came, mine 5-0 went last year. This year, I think I've got about 4 or 5.
So, yeah, sort of birthdays.
And my mom was 8-0 last Thursday.
Yes, and I
spoiled her. She was over the moon and with all the videos and everything. I know she's missing me.
So we've got a great show today, haven't we? You've done a really good interview, haven't you, Sue?
I interviewed Alan. His name's Alan Batcott. Now, Alan has been living with HIV for some years now, and this is a spoiler alert. Alan is a heterosexual man, and he's doing amazing stuff within the HIV community, bringing awareness to, you know what, it happens to anybody. And obviously we had HIV testing last week, didn't we? And he'd done a sort of sort of push to get heterosexual people to come and get a test. So he's got an amazing journey and an amazing story, and some of the things we were talking about. And I truly understand, you know, from the conversation I had with Alan, why, first of all, men in general don't like talking about health. And number two, why men don't talk to each other about health. And he was telling me some of the things why that has happened and what's happening. And he also focuses quite a lot on mental health. So really, really interesting. A really sort of, I mean, I thought I knew Alan because I do a lot of work with him at the Positive Voices, but I really sort of managed to sort of pull some really interesting information for all and to bring to the attention that, you know, HIV does happen to heterosexual people, absolutely, and I think the heterosexual community needs to stand up and say, you know what, get yourself flipping tested, for goodness sake. You know, that's my attitude anyway, so
it's quite funny you say that, Sue, because I was recently speaking to somebody that had contacted me through YouTube, and he's waiting for his result, but he thinks that he's positive. And I directed him towards the show, and he said, isn't that for gay people? So it's amazing, isn't it? How, you know, how that there are these thoughts and ideas that, you know, that HIV is still this gay disease, you know, which it so clearly isn't, especially by the stats at the moment, you know, with the heterosexual community being more affected now than the gay community. So,
yeah. Absolutely. And I think it's letting all communities know that HIV can be affected by HIV. And I've had similar actions in the past that I'm trying to scare people. I'm absolutely not trying to scare people. I mean, do you when you talk to people, Tammy, when you do your other bits?
Interestingly, last week I was just chatting to one of my tutors, and he said to me, by the way, this week is HIV test week, isn't it? And I just thought, oh, really? People are aware.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. And shows like ours that brings it up into the front, and it's good stuff.
HIVR is the UK's only show for people living with HIV, sharing stories, news and views on living positively with the virus.
If you've just tuned in, this is the HIVR on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM in the Brighton area and .com online. You can also get us on podcast. Well, what has been last week an amazing testing week throughout the United Kingdom, and we have a brilliant show like we always do. We've got Alan Bancott on the show today. I'm going to bring him in a second, but I want you to listen to some of the stats about heterosexual people. Now, apparently the number of straight people being diagnosed with HIV is higher than that of gay and bisexual men for the first time in a decade, new figures show. Now, statistics released by the UK Health Security Agency show that straight people make up almost half, that's 49% of all new HIV diagnoses in England in 2020. Gay and bisexual men accounted for 45% of new diagnoses, and experts are warning that the true number of straight people contracting HIV is likely even higher due to the corona pandemic, and there was 33% drop in heterosexuals being tested for the virus in the sexual health service in 2020. That's compared to a 7% drop in HIV testing for gay and bisexual men. Alan, welcome to the HIV Hour. How are you, my dear?
I'm fine. How are you?
Yes. Now, as a heterosexual man living with HIV, what are those statistics I've just been reading out say to you?
It says to me that what I've been trying to harp on about for a long time is heterosexual men don't think they're at risk. I'm living proof that, yes, you are.
And Alan, how long have you been living with HIV?
I've been living with HIV now for 12 years.
Wow. And because I can see you, our viewers unfortunately can't see you. You look the fitter, you look the picture of fitness, as one would say, smiley face. You look healthy. Have you been healthy all those 12 years?
I've had my ups and downs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Obviously, mm-hmm. when I got diagnosed, you didn't start treatment straight away like you do now.
Right.
In fact, my clinic, it was you had to get down to the point of being diagnosed with AIDS before you started treatments. Luckily, and thank God, that they've now decided that the best thing is to start treatment straight away.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously the little niggles that I get, you don't get now.
No. People
who are diagnosed now don't get any of the, you know, there was also the mental stress.
Yeah.
You'd go down to the clinic. For me at that point, it was every 2 months. And every 2 months you'd have your bloods done. And it was, am I going to start treatment? Am I going to be ill this time?
Mm.
What's going to happen? In that time, I had shingles. So mm-hmm. I was quite poorly with shingles. And it took a big strain on my mental health.
Mm-hmm. Alan, let's go back 12 years. That diagnosis. Now, as a heterosexual woman myself living with HIV, I don't know about you, but I will never, or anyone, any person living with HIV, I will never forget that day I got diagnosed. How was it for you?
Very traumatic.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it was 5 past 5 on the 9th of September 2010.
Wow, you that specific, you know, that's how much it's registered in your brain. Wow, okay.
I'd gone and had an STI check. Mm-hmm. I have recently been divorced, been and had the fun as you do as a newly single person.
Of course.
I just got serious with another young lady and decided for once in my life to do a sensible thing. Not very often that I do that. And I went and had an STI check. And they ask you all the questions and this, that, and the other. I just said, just do everything. Just do an MOT. Mm-hmm. Get it all done. Get it over and done with. And I thought nothing more of it. About a week or so later, I got a call from the clinic. We need to have a quick word with you. Nothing serious, but we need to have a quick word. The consultant called me into a room. She sat me down in a chair. She closed the door. And as she was walking from the door to her chair, she went, "No easy way to say this, you're HIV positive."
Wow.
And yeah, it just hit me like a ton of bricks.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the room for about half an hour or so.
Yeah.
Can't remember another word she said.
No. Alan, can I ask you at this moment, before that diagnosis, did you know much about HIV? What did you know? There's a question.
Well, I'm at that age where I grew up in the 1980s.
Yeah.
So I remember HIV coming around. I remember the adverts that the government put out. I remember Princess Di going into the hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
I remember Freddie Mercury dying.
Mm-hmm.
So my only knowledge was a 1980s advert that says you were going to die.
Mm-hmm.
Pictures of people dying in a hospital with a princess going and shaking their hands because they're mm-hmm. going to die very soon.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the world's best musicians and frontmen
mm-hmm.
dying. Mm-hmm. And that was my knowledge.
Yeah. Did you think at that time that, because we've seen HIV back in the 80s, and I remember it myself, you know, I remember the wonderful Freddie Mercury, and I remember all those things you've been talking about. And I don't know about you, but I had so many misconceptions because it was shown to be in a certain community. So, you know, and sometimes when we see things on the telly and what have you, we tend to, not necessarily, but sort of believe that. I mean, what were your thoughts and feelings on the communities that they were sort of promoting HIV was happening in?
Well, for me, the only communities that it was being promoted for was the gay community, the gay men.
Yeah.
And in Africa.
Yeah.
You know, I knew it was a massive problem in Africa.
Yeah.
But that was about as far as it went, you know.
Yeah.
I'm a white heterosexual man living in the middle of Cheshire. You know.
You can't make it up, Alan, could you?
You know, it's not something that happens here.
No.
Much to my surprise, but
yeah,
you know, it was never something that even crossed my radar. I knew it was there,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
but that was it.
Yeah. So, okay, so you've got the diagnose. It was a shock, obviously. So where did you go from there, Alan? What happened after your diagnose?
Well, I then had to go back and tell my then girlfriend.
Right.
She was a little bit younger than me, but could still remember all the advertising and the hype.
Mm-hmm.
So she was just as scared.
Right.
Now she went, you know, we're in this together.
Yeah, right. We're in it
together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that lasted 4 weeks. She took her little lad to nursery and never came back. And I got a phone call off her mum saying, get out the house. So I then found myself homeless,
mm-hmm.
HIV positive.
Wow.
The year before, I'd lost my business.
Mm-hmm.
So I was skint.
Right.
And the mental health team picked me up.
Right.
When I say picked me up, they sent a police van to pick me up. And they put me in a crisis house.
Right.
I was there for, I'm going to say about a week. Until they worked out I wasn't actually going to kill myself.
Right.
Now, I've never been one for the suicidal bits.
Mm-hmm.
But they had to just make sure. Because
Of course. Yeah.
And then they went, well, you need to find somewhere else to go. Now, my head wasn't working at all at this point. And I went, well, I don't know, you know, what? Or they went, well, we can find you a homeless shelter.
Mm-hmm.
Right, okay. But have you got any family you could ring? All right, well, you know, I could ring my dad. So I rang him up and said, you know, I'm in the stock. I've left the girlfriend, or she kicked me out. I'm in a crisis house. I need somewhere to go. And his response was, well, you know where your bedroom is. You've got a front door key. Just come home.
Mm-hmm.
And the crisis team actually put the fuel in my car to drive me home.
Wow.
I was that skint.
Mm-hmm.
I had no fuel in the car, no food, no nothing. So I went and moved back in with my dad. And he babysat me, is the only way I can describe it.
Yeah.
He gave me daily pocket money so I could go and have a drink. Not something you expect in your mid-30s.
No.
He gave me things to do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he kept me busy,
mm-hmm.
kept me doing things.
Mm-hmm. Bit of a saviour. He was a bit of your saviour at that point of time when you really needed, you know, you felt as though you really needed someone.
Yes,
in a crisis, like you said, yeah. Wow.
He really was a saviour, and he's my best mate. He really is.
Oh, that's lovely, Alan.
And from there, it was more mental health teams.
Right.
Mm-hmm. A lot of counselling.
Yeah, I was going to say, did you have some? I know I did for the first year of my diagnosis. I thought, oh, no, counselling's only for people with massive problems and all of those misconception things. But, you know, I had a wonderful first year of counselling. How did you find it, Alan?
Well, I got mine through the local HIV charity.
Right, uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Because the GP said, well, I can give you 6 sessions. And it's like, well, what 6 sessions can I
take? Yeah, putting a time limit on it, yeah.
Whereas the local HIV charity at that point,
mm-hmm.
They'd partnered with the local college,
mm-hmm.
and they had all the trainee counsellors,
mm-hmm.
who came and had to do so many hours to qualify.
Yeah.
Well, we got X amount of hours.
Yeah.
Now, I had 3 years of counselling.
Right.
I were, you know, because once you open a cookie jar,
yeah, exactly,
you get to the bottom of it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So yeah, it took me through some very dark points, but eventually I came out of it. You know, like I say, at that point, our local HIV charity did a lot for people with HIV. Unfortunately, funding has gone the way of the ghost.
Yeah.
So all the things that I had when I got diagnosed are no longer there.
Let me tell you about a thrill.
Radio Reverb. So, Alan, when did you decide? Because I know you do a lot and you're quite proud. You do quite a lot of stuff within the HIV sector. When was it that you decided, you know what, I want to do something about this. I want to create awareness. I want to let people know it doesn't happen. So when did all that start?
I suppose it started originally not long after my diagnosis.
Right.
A friend of mine was one of the trustees of the charity.
Okay.
Now, I'd known him for about 10 years prior to this. And he turned around and said, we need another trustee who's one of the service users. So I went in as a trustee. And as part of that, I had to do a couple of bits of speaking. The first one was to a group of health students, half a dozen of them.
Yeah.
Which I was petrified about.
Right.
And then the next one was, at the time, like I say, I'm going back to 2012, 2013-ish. The largest of the HIV charities in the Northwest set up a consortia, and they did it with some of the lottery funding, and the idea was to build a knowledge base, and then use that knowledge base to support smaller charities, smaller grassroots charities, with information, with funding, with all sorts. And it was run by our then director of services, a lad called Paul. And we did a regional conference. Now, it just happened to land in Liverpool the week before the NAM conference in Liverpool.
Right.
National AIDS Trust. So they had people flying in from all over the country, all over the world for this conference. Well, we set the conference up for the day before. And a lot of the people came a day early to do our conference and then go on to the NAM one.
Right.
And I got asked to speak about mental health and a diagnosis.
Right.
Because it was to professionals.
Yes.
And I stood up and there must have been 200 odd people in that room. It petrified me.
I can imagine.
I knew I had to do it. Because I'd crashed so badly. And a lot of it was to do with internal stigmas.
Yeah.
Of, I'm a white heterosexual bloke, how on earth have I got this?
Yeah,
you know, it shouldn't happen to me.
No.
And I stood up for about 15 minutes and did the whole thing off the top of my head, and apparently it went down really well.
I can imagine it did, Alan. Yes, I bet they stood up, they really listened up to you. I can imagine.
So I did that, and then, as I say, the funding disappeared from HIV charities.
Yeah.
and the charity then had to go in a different direction. So it didn't then fit in with, you know, they went more on to LGBT support.
Yeah, sure.
A heterosexual white bloke doesn't really fit in with that role model.
But you know what, Alan, you do some amazing work in schools, don't you?
Yes. I was in an online group. And a gentleman who wrote a book called Roland, a very charismatic gentleman, we got chatting and he went, I like your story. All right, okay. And he wrote me into doing the Positive Voices campaign.
That's from the 10 Signs.
Yes. So I went through the training and, I'm obviously, because a lot of the talks are down in London area and the Brighton area, and I'm based in the middle of Cheshire.
Yeah.
I do a lot of it by Zoom and the wonderful technologies that they've got. And I tell my story, you know, and try and educate people that it isn't a gay plague.
No.
Because so many people still think it is a gay plague. And it's not.
And you, absolutely, you know, no, what a heterosexual man standing up in front, whether it's on Zoom or whether it's in person, talking about 25, 30 kids that are starting their life. And we want them to start their life with the correct information, right, Alan?
Yes, definitely.
Absolutely.
You know, we've got three children between me and the wife.
Right.
Now, they range from 18 down to 9. The eldest two, which is 18 and 16, they've gone through high schools and the sex education and all the rest of it. And none of them were taught about HIV.
No.
Which is atrocious.
Absolutely. It is. It is. And that just brings me on. Let's bring your rock in. Let's bring, you know how I'm talking about. And I get the impression, and correct me if I'm wrong, she is a rock. She was, she is, she has, and she is. Tell us about your rock, Alan.
Marie, my wife. my long-suffering wife. I say long-suffering. just coming up to 3 years married now. We were childhood sweethearts. She was 16, I was 19. We split up because at the time there was no mobile phones, no internet, and she was a trainee hairdresser and I got offered a job running a pub in the Midlands. So I went off to go and work in the Midlands, and you know, you can't communicate like you can do nowadays.
No.
So it just fizzled. Well, I've been diagnosed a number of years by this point, and I suddenly get a message through Facebook from Marie. It's like, okay. It's like, yeah, I was nattering to some friends that we had back in the day. And they said, you know, have you ever heard from Alan? And we got chatting and, you know, we got on really well again. To the point that we decided to go out for a drink. Well, an HIV positive heterosexual man, this is one of the scariest things that can happen. Because over the years, I've had some bad experiences with telling people.
Sure.
You know, I've had people, when I've been talking, have literally stood up from a table and walked off. Especially being in a rural community. Where, you know, when I was growing up, we had one gay in the village, literally.
Yeah.
One gay in the village. So I decided that I'd rather a walk away at the beginning than us get comfortable together and then she walk away.
Yeah.
So I told her by text. Yeah, I need to tell you something. Hi, JV Positive. And her response was, oh my God, are you okay? Well, you know, she's not run off yet. That's a good point. Now, you know, as I said in the beginning, you know, she trained as a hairdresser.
Yeah.
Well, back in the 90s, when she was doing her training, you had to learn about skin diseases, bloodborne diseases, because, of course, as a hairdresser,
sure,
you can nick someone in a pair of scissors, or you need to know what's going on with the scalp. And so she'd learned all about these things. And she'd learned all about HIV and hepatitis and the other bloodborne nasties that you can get. And she kept her knowledge up and up to date. So she knew that HIV was a treatable condition. She knew that anybody could get it. And yeah, she was completely fine. She was just more concerned that I was okay.
Yeah. And she's been one of your biggest supporters, hasn't you? You speak about her so fondly and so kindly, and she's been, have I got that right?
Yeah, because she gives me the encouragement, she gives me the strength to do what I do. Her point has always been, from when we got together, it's nothing to be ashamed of. You know, I used to hide my status quite a lot. And she's like, well, why hide it? It's not something to be ashamed of. It's just an illness. Just something you live with. You know, even to the point that when we started to get a little bit more serious, I took Marie to go and see my consultant. Now, my consultant, Martin, is brilliant. Dead down to earth. Well, you can tell I'm on first name terms with him. I think just about all his clients are on first name terms with him. And we went in and, you know, this is Marie. Do we need to do anything because of my HIV and this, that and the other? Well, it was about the time that the partner study was done. Now, the results hadn't been officially accepted by everyone at this point. Now, I don't know if anyone knows what the partner study is or was or whatever else, but it was a study of HIV positive and one partner and an HIV negative other partner. And they did it with all groups. They did it with the gay men. They did it with heterosexual men. They did it all, any combination.
All communities,
And it was to see if somebody on effective treatment could then pass the virus on. And they found out you couldn't. Now, the study had only just been published. And Martin was very in on, you know, what was going on. He'd followed the study all the way from the beginning. And he went, well, the latest research is, if you want to have kids, crack on. No, we've got to wash anything, we've got to do anything. It was just, if you want to have kids, crack on. Right. No, I'm 40. No, thanks. I'm not going back to nappies now.
But that's true, that, you know, if you're on effective medication, first of all, you can't pass it on to another sexual partner, right, Alan? If you wanted to have kids and you're childbearing or whatever, that can happen. And, you know, if a woman who's positive can have a negative baby, a positive man can father a negative baby, correct?
Yep, that's correct.
Absolutely. Yes. Alan, what would you say, because we're coming to the end now, what would you say to anybody, whether they're heterosexual, whether they're whatever community, what would you say? Well, how would you encourage them to go for a HIV test? They've never had a test before.
The biggest thing with HIV is knowing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Out of those figures that you read out at the beginning, mm-hmm. one of the other figures that came out within it was what's called late diagnosis.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, a late diagnosis is somebody whose immune system is already compromised. Mm-hmm. If you get an early diagnosis, the virus has no effect on your body, it's just there. Mm-hmm. A late diagnosis, it's already compromised your body. Mm-hmm. You know, when I got diagnosed, you waited until mm-hmm. your immune system was compromised before yeah. you started treatment. You know, and some of the late diagnoses now, especially within the heterosexual community and mm-hmm. I mean, women,
yeah,
they don't test for it. Mm-hmm. So you find people almost on their deathbed mm-hmm. before they get tested. Mm-hmm. Now, the figures that I'm on about is out of the nearly 50% of heterosexual men mm-hmm. Who went through, mm-hmm. 60% of them were late diagnosis.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, if you compare that to the gay men statistics, mm-hmm. only 18% of gay men will a late diagnosis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we need to get the testing done. We need to, you know,
encourage it more in the heterosexual community.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Now, heterosexual men are awful.
Oh, I know.
We don't talk.
No.
We don't discuss anything. We're useless with our health. But also society has taken a lot from heterosexual men. Mm. You know, if you go back in history, heterosexual men had the tap room in a pub.
Yeah.
And even though men are useless at talking to each other, get 3 or 4 pints down them and then they'll talk to each other.
Yes. Yes.
But the tap room went the way of a food pub and disappeared.
Yeah.
The men no longer had a men-only space. Then we had hobby clubs. And men will also talk when they're doing something.
Yeah.
Well, now I'm not saying this is a bad thing, but women suddenly became more interested in joinery and engineering and things like that and joined the hobby clubs. So they then became not men-only spaces. So the men stopped talking again. So men don't have the space.
Yeah. You know,
women are quite happily sit and have a coffee with each other and natter. There is loads of support groups for the LGBT communities. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, you know, I know that in the minority groups, they have a lot of support groups, but their men are even worse than white heterosexual men for talking.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, we need to be pushing men to talk.
Yeah, definitely. And
that is the only way that we're going to break down.
There's barriers and perhaps a stigma to testing.
Yeah,
and you're actually doing that, Alan. You're speaking up, and hopefully, you know, some other men. I know you've done some other media pieces throughout testing week. Hopefully, some men have said, "Oh God, okay, I'm heterosexual. Perhaps I'll go for a test." So that we've got to try and see it in small chunks, because I think it is going to make a difference. So,
I'm sure.
And you know what? We want to get you back on the show. Okay, thanks again, Alan. Come on again, won't you?
Will do. Cheers. Bye.
97.2 FM. Radio Reverb.
Welcome back to the HIV Hour on 97.2 FM, DAB Plus. What a great interview.
Yes. Did you understand what I was saying? Some of that stuff that he was talking about, you know, there used to be an initiative called, I think it still is, the Man's Shed. But apparently women supporters said that women should be able to attend the Man's Shed. But it stopped that conversation between men. It was one of those small initiatives that made men talk. And then I know for a fact, you're probably with me here, Tanya, mm-hmm. straight men are what's-its for talking about anything. Health onto the agenda and talk about maybe living with HIV. So, yeah, it was just some of the things that really sort of hit home and how he struggled. But you know what he's doing now, because he doesn't want his children, his kids, to go through the similar things that he's gone through. So he's doing it for, you know, he spoke about his wonderful lady who's his rock, which I thought was amazing. So, yes, great interview.
But also, he was mentioning about the mental health side, and you know, and that's a big thing. So we've got a few numbers, haven't we? A few contact
we
numbers.
Have, if anyone wants to contact. We have. We've got the Mind, not an international number that will sort of signpost you to all other numbers, and the number is 0300 123 3393, and we've got the THT Direct, which is 0808 802 1221.
Great. And I've got one, which is Positively UK. Now, they do support for heterosexual, bisexual men who are living with HIV, and that could be one-to-one peer support. I think there's a mixed heterosexual support group that you can join if you're interested. Their email is positivelyuk.org. Or you can call them direct on 0207 713 0444.
Great.
That's it. So, yeah. Yeah, also, there's some news I saw yesterday. It was about the new New York patient.
And so it's a lady, isn't it?
Yeah.
From stem cell treatment, they've managed to cure her. I get very sort of... I don't know about you Steve, when they talk about cures, what's your reaction? Have you seen that bit of news? I haven't seen this one, Sue, but
I remember that I remember the ones that we've seen in the past, and I think everybody kind of jumps on the bandwagon, don't they, of cure. And I think it's important to realize that often these people have been through extensive treatments and you know, other treatments for other conditions and things, so I'm always hopeful, hopeful,
of course.
But you know, at the same time, I think we've got to be aware of what it takes to get you know, to get the virus out of our bodies, and then it's not gonna be that's not gonna work for everybody.
No.
You did say in the article I read that a lot of people have gone through the same thing, and it didn't work, so you have to tell that into consideration. I've got a bit of news before we finish. I put my name forward to do the injectables that might start in April or May, depending on whenever they...
Josh, is that Brighton? It is in Brighton.
So yeah, I'm just putting my name forward because I thought it'd be quite a good... I wanted to do it anyway, but also I thought it'd be good to like do a live kind of how I get on with it and get people to come on the show later. It's going to be around April.
Following your process and progress.
Yes, that'd be great,
wouldn't it?
So
that's... I'll keep everyone posted about that, and yeah.
Tanya, would you do an injectable?
I would go for a trial and see how it is, because now I've just been relying on, you know, on taking a pill a day.
I know.
So I think it's going to be difficult for me, because every time it will haunt me like, oh, I've forgotten to do something. You know what I mean?
I think you get programmed. You get programmed, don't you?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So it's gonna be, it's not gonna be easy.
No, but you can. Well, you know, I mean, you were talking about something as well, Stephen, on how maybe it may be good for you, injectables.
Yes. Yeah, so being diabetic, we often get stomach problems, gastrointestinal problems and things like that. So I often get very nauseous, and for me, there can be times where I miss my HIV meds for up to 3 days. So of course, me myself, I'm panicking because I'm like, I haven't had my meds for 3 days. It doesn't happen very often, but it does happen. So to have an injection at a time like that would be brilliant, you know, because even to get my tablets in liquid form is not a real job for a lot of hospitals. So you know, it would be a great option, you know, for people that have other conditions as well, that maybe stops them being able to take tablets or having stomach problems.
Great.
So one to watch.
Definitely.
So there is some disadvantages and advantages on this injectable.
Yes, everyone's going to be different, but they aren't they? Some people might not want to do, you know, go down that road. So so if you want to contact us, anyone got any stories or anything, it's hivhour@gmail.com. Or you can follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Twitter's HIV_hour. And and we do podcasts. So
yes, we do. The world.
So well, it was a good show, wasn't it?
Yes, as always, yes. We're battling on. We're not still not in the studio, everybody, unfortunately. But it feels like we are, we have to say. But there we go. We're continuing to sort of soldier on, as one would say, and doing, making sure we put out a show. So which I think is more than ever so important that we do that within our communities. So thanks ever so much for everybody's support and continuing to support the HIV Hour. We'll see you again all soon. Take care, everybody.
Take care. Bye.
HIV Hour is the UK's only show for people living with HIV, sharing stories, news and views on living positively with the virus.